This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 117, Uber Games. Hello and welcome to yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin coming to you on a sunny Sunday from my home office here atop the Games at Work Tower in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and delighted to be recording with my co-host, Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and I am in the dark, dank basement of the underground bunker.
We'll send some food down to you or something. Coffee, I don't know.
I'm about 90% done with Cryptonomicon.
Ooh, love that book.
The book. And yeah, so lots of tunnels and caves and other sundries.
Yes, yes. But you will emerge to the other side.
Yes.
Unless you stop reading now, and then you won't.
it took a long time to get going. There's a lot of background in this book, but yes. Really enjoying it.
Well, awesome. Well, we've got a great show, and we're doing a sort of a special edition on a Sunday because schedules and timing and all kinds of wackiness were conspiring against all of us. We're wishing Phaedra well as she is off in other parts. But we've got a fantastic show to share with you, especially given some of the new articles that we've been reading about Uber. And the first one is one, Michael, that came across your news stream, I guess it was earlier this week, didn't it?
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I think I was watching, I don't even remember which podcast I was watching, but they were talking about the Uber game. And I was like, Uber game? Come on, give me a break here. And so I went out and found the link that they're referencing. And really what's happened is Uber has released a mobile video game. I don't know why they call it a video game. Let's just call it a mobile game. Mobile video game just sounds a little bit redundant, to help in their driver recruitment efforts. And, as a quick aside, I saw that this week the California legislature or courts or whichever ruled that Uber drivers are employees.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about that too. And in Canada, there's actually a third distinction between a contractor and an employee. There's something kind of in the middle there too. So very interesting that you see that ruling come through that in California.
Yeah, but given that, so what the goal of this game is really, I think, twofold. They only talk about one, both in the podcast as well as in the articles, which is, you know, a recruitment aspect for Uber. But you and I were talking before the show, and it was really funny because we both came to the same realization that what the game does is, and you've played it, I've just watched it. So you want describe what it actually does since you've played it, and
yeah,
then
sure.
We can talk about kind of our aha moments.
In fact, I was just going to share a couple of, some of the screen grabs that I've taken from this as well, so that you could see them. My take on the game is that it allows you to play in a real world map environment. So it's using Google Maps to render San Francisco, and not the whole San Francisco, just kind of a portion of it. You've got the Market Street area. You can go downtown to, the Buena Vista Center. You can go to the ballpark, et cetera. So you've got a range of motion to work in, and it works very much like Uber does. So this would help educate people who've never taken an Uber before kind of understand what it is, which is, hey, I'm on this street. I'm hailing an Uber. Your car kind of, pings with the sonar kind of vision. And then you as the driver go drive over to pick up the person. They tell you where they want to go, and then you take them there. And depending on how well you've done it, you will earn ratings, which is exactly what happens in the real life Uber app. So they give you 1 to 5 stars based upon how you did and how quickly you got where you were going. And then they will also give you the money for doing the route. And the game will prompt you as you play along. It's like, wow, you look like you're doing pretty well. Looks like you could do this, you know, for real and make some money at it too. Would you be interested in becoming an Uber driver? And gives you the link to click on right there to register to become an Uber driver. And I presume, I haven't actually gone that far, to download the driver app and allow you to, you know, start being an Uber driver right away. But what you and I talked about independently, we came to the exact same rationalization, conclusion, aha moment, I think is how you described it, Michael, is that the game could be something that would help improve drivers, Uber drivers in the field, get where they need to go most efficiently. Because if you know San Francisco,
understand routing,
if you know Gary Street, you know, at 3 p.m. typically gets blocked up because there's a couple of stores there that always get their deliveries around that time and that street is blocked, you could help Uber drivers get where they need to go. And shoot, you might be even able to earn some money doing it if you think about it that way, right?
Yeah, and it's really interesting because, you know, I've been looking at various different mapping technologies and companies over the last couple of years in the day job, right? And how they do things, right? And where the value is. And you and I, we've talked about this so many times, it's almost redundant now, but are big fans of Waze and how it kind of gamed map improvements, and there's news out in the world right now that Nokia Here, which is, you know, really high-end maps that are used underneath a lot of car technology for mapping, and the value there on having highly accurate maps integrated in with traffic and route preferences. And this is just a great way to get that value for free of understanding the best routes based off of time of day data and traffic patterns of other people, right? So that crowdsourcing of map improvement, or I should say route improvement, not map, but route improvement is a huge value that the Uber guys get out of people playing this game.
Yeah, it almost is a meta crowdsourcing opportunity. When you think about it, you're helping the crowdsourced Uber drivers by crowdsourcing the opportunity to make their routes even more efficient.
Yeah, and think about it from that perspective. You know, we talked about I guess it was about 3 shows ago. You know, is it appropriate to know what the real value is in the game, what they're really asking you to do, right? And we talked about it in the last show too, to some degree. And I think that's really where the real value is. I think that's the real value that they capture from this game is improved routing, and the driver recruitment is a secondary feature.
Maybe so, but they're not there yet. Right now, this was an experiment, so you got to tip the hat to the Uber crowd for investing enough to create a basic app. So basic app is San Francisco. You're a driver. You're picking up fares. You're taking them from one place to the other. It gives a little bit of the opportunity there, too, of saying, hey, you know, this fare wants to go to the ballpark. Do you know where it is? Well, you should, because in the game, you actually took a fare or two to that ballpark already. So you should generally know where in San Francisco it is. And it gives you 3 options to pick from, at least in the basic part of the game where I was in. And you could pick the right one. It's like, oh, awesome. Excellent. So now you have the target to get where you're going. If you're paying attention in the Uber experience, the driver does get the GPS mapping through the app, and it does try to provide them the most efficient route to get where they're going. But this reminded me very much of conversations I had now better than 20 years ago, let's just say, in Berlin.
Back in the day, where
I had friends who were taking the exams to become a licensed cab driver in Berlin. So this is well before GPS. And in order to become a licensed cab driver in Berlin, you had to take a test. And the way the test worked was the instructor would say, there is a fare at this intersection. Who wants to go to that intersection? Please write out the best possible way to get that person from their origin point to their destination. And you had to know it. You had to have the map of the city in your head, and you had to know exactly how to do this. So this could be a little bit of a way of testing too, and you could probably identify people maybe who know certain cities better or worse through a similar mechanism. Say, gosh, this person knows the city of San Francisco so well. Not only are we trying to recruit them, we're going to heavily recruit them because they would be a fantastic ambassador of the brand.
And again, not only that, because they are so good, they, through the use of the Uber driver app, will also improve the maps and make all Uber drivers better.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because that could all be fed right back into the centralized database that will now feed back into the phones and ipso facto delicio get you where you want to go. This could be. Yeah, so we're reading, you and I, a lot more into what this app could be. But that's because we also have thought a lot about these kinds of things. You know that I've loved mapping games because the way
the Monopoly
world.
Map yep. game, right? I mean, that's the other thing I was thinking right when I saw it was you would definitely want to play this just because you like to take the real world maps and play games on them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And owning, you know, properties that, you know, you can't really own. You know, I own this gas station. I own this, you know, retail store. I own this office building. And then, you know, what does that mean to do care, feeding, uptake of those two? So this, for me, at least personally, I have a lot of affinity to these kinds of games because I like the overlay on the real world. And it lends itself really nicely to augmented reality and a variety of other things if you continue to expand them further. So like I think we said, hats off to the Uber guys for taking this step. We think you've got a couple more interesting steps you might be able to take that could provide you with even more insight into your business.
Very cool. Very cool.
So, yes, so we're thinking transportation.
Hats off and pedal to the metal.
Well, we're thinking transportation. We came up with something that maybe is not quite a pedal to the metal, but maybe it's like pedal to the air.
Pedal to the air above metal as close as possible.
Yeah, or maybe just foot on the metal. But so we don't get you confused too much. We saw a really...
Come on. It's a main goal of this show is to confuse our listeners.
We're really good at it. We can use jargon like applesauce and just confuse people that way too, right? So we saw this Wired article that led us to a video and to a little more detail on hover bikes. So if you are familiar at all with the Star Wars franchise, and if you're listening to this show for any length of time, how can you not be? The concept of a hover bike is like a motorcycle with no wheels that gets you from point A to point B. And in the UK, there is a company called Malloy Aeronautics, and they have created some prototypes now of a hover bike. So it's a single person passenger vehicle, if you will, to allow for that bike to hover over whatever terrain you might be on and move you quickly from point A to point B. And the key thing that came from this article, too, was the point that the United States military, in fact, is now looking at taking this proof of concept and bringing it forward and looking at it for military applications. And in the pre-show, Michael and I were just talking about this, that it was really fascinating to see how this could work and how more efficiently and quickly you could move personnel from point A to point B than with anything with wheels or helicopters or jets or anything else in a small contained space.
Yeah. What I thought was really neat is the way they structured this is it's got four propellers and the four propellers
are offset
and kind of overlap. Mm-hmm. So that you have a lot of stability, and because they're kind of at angles going down, so they're not quite parallel to the ground, but they're if you take parallel and then bend it down a little bit on the outer edges, it causes the pressure of the air to be evenly distributed underneath.
Mm-hmm.
It does that on four corners, so you have this pocket of air that sits underneath the vehicle. If you think about it that from that perspective of aerodynamics and pressure and everything else, which causes the lift to then give kind of a smooth ride on the platform between those four propellers that in the video that's attached has a life-size, I'll call it a crash test dummy, but they don't crash. that they're kind of controlling the vehicle with a remote control from a distance, but you can see the human-sized body sitting on top of it. And you can imagine the same vehicle scaled up and down for a different level of weight that it needs to carry and needs for transport. Very, very, very cool.
Yeah,
it reminds me actually of almost of the troop carriers in Avatar.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that before too, but you're exactly right. You know, the thing that sprung to my mind was, could this be effective across all kinds of terrain? So not just a wooded area, but through desert areas, or even potentially over lakes or rivers too, to quickly move people across. And earlier examples of hovercraft certainly provided for that. That's not in the video, but it makes you think that kind of terrain may not be problematic.
I thought in the earlier hovercrafts, what they would do over water was they would have these big kind of rubber,
like an apron or something that would kind of contain.
Yeah, aprons that would kind of contain the air so that it would cause more lift over the water, because the ground surface obviously has a different density between land and water. And so you need that extra containment of the lift properties on water.
Right, right.
So I'm wondering how it does in very uneven terrain, right? If that center of the air pocket that it's caused by these four semi-overlapping propellers keeps enough of it down below to keep it on very, very uneven terrain. Know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do. So that's why I was thinking about it as well, because this, again, the practical uses of something like this could be extremely efficient when you're thinking about moving people from place to place, or, you know, backpacks or, you know, containers that could be moved in this way too. I mean, it doesn't have to be a person on it. It could be all automated, right? So this could be a resupply mechanism to get supplies from point A to point B too.
Supply chain.
Supply chain. Amazon could have them too and deliver your packages. I mean, there's a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and you would have to think about the packaging of the stuff on the platform, because in a water environment or a very sandy environment, you could see
this kicks up this a lot of
air
stuff.
Pressure kicking a lot of that stuff right up underneath the platform.
Yeah, so I'm kind of excited about this, and I think there's some really interesting things that may come of it. So we'll be staying tuned to the videos to see what other things get published on it soon.
And if I remember correctly from the Terminator movies, our robot overlords used very similar types of propellers.
Yeah, well, I mean, the quadcopter concept, you know, this is just taking those quads and bringing them in a little bit more and putting them almost in line with one another, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So, that's a really good way of describing the overlap.
Yeah, yeah. So you found something that was very similar to thinking of the Back to the Future movies of
obviously
hoverboard, and you know, like the self-tying sneakers, which are also under development, so we are hopefully going to see self-tying sneakers and hoverboard soon. This Lexus example is pretty slick.
Yeah, well, I think was it earlier this year or late last year, there was a fake ad campaign where they showed the hoverboard, and they had oh God, I'm going blank on the actor's name who played the Doc on Back to the Future.
Oh,
can't believe I'm going blank on
his name too.
Anyway, doing a meeting between him and Tony. Oh, I'm going blank
Stark?
On the skateboarder too.
No,
and Stark
Hawk.
Is the name that pops
Hawk.
To mind, which
Hawk.
Is wrong.
Hawk.
Hawk, Tony Hawk, thank you. that caused a lot of excitement. But what's really interesting when you look at the new article around this, what this really looks like. So this is a piece of work that was done for Lexus was the original ad, and Toyota has been doing some work also in this space. Well, you know, Lexus is part of Toyota. And what it really is over a metal surface with kind of a maglev, just like trains, and liquid nitrogen cooled, because there's a significant amount of power being going into this in theory. But realistically, what's happening is probably not true hoverboards, but suspension experiments in vehicles, because there's already stuff being done with magnets to improve suspension.
Right.
And this would be in the automotive market. You're not going to see, you know, maglev cars yet.
Well, because we don't have metal roads. Trains for quite a while, though. So.
Well, that's the maglev. Yeah. The high speed trains in Japan. But if you imagine that brought down into the suspension of the vehicle, you could have significantly improved ride control.
True, right, exactly, because you could be using maglev between the connection to the road and the chassis of the car.
Yep, yep.
Really? And well, so that is kind of wild when you think about it, because that would...
Well, if you think about it, the shocks wouldn't go bad.
No, you wouldn't have shocks to go bad because there were no shocks.
Right.
But then you have the connection of the chassis of the car. Well, you still could do that. But this would then provide for the suspension. Yeah. Wow. Yes. Very cool.
So that's where I think it actually comes into more of a reality type thing than some of these fake ads and interesting stuff going on with Toyota, right?
Yes.
So, neat. I think that's cool.
I think that's very cool. I think it's very cool as well. So, you know, Michael, to round out the show for today, we had one other thing that we discussed earlier on, and that was this this concept of crowdsourcing. You know, we've been thinking about, you know, how do you Uber yourself? And we have a meta Uber where Uber is Ubering itself, if we can use that verb to verbify a verb. The last thing that we had for today was this example of Legacy Republic. So Legacy Republic is, I think the way we're kind of describing it is sort of like a digital scrapbooking organization where the tools and the capabilities are provided to people to assemble digital scrapbooks of photos, video, home movies,
old VHS,
you know, memories. And the way that they're approaching this crowdsourcing market is to say, hey, if people bring all of their content, you know, old VHS tapes and reel to reel kind of stuff and all that, they can digitize it, but then you've got enormous amounts of content that needs to be edited. And the editing and the assembly is something that allows for a crowdsourcing opportunity for people to say, hey, I can do this as a business. I can now help make stories out of the thousands of videos and the thousands of minutes worth of footage and the hundreds and hundreds of pictures that you may have as well.
Yeah, what was so funny about this one, if before the show started, you were saying, hey, don't forget you had found this other link. That was, and I was like, oh, yeah, that was that other Uber one. I can't remember it. and it was really about gamifying the business of memory preservation.
Yes,
so I completely forgot that one. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting in the sense of when you think about all the content, and as we talked about on the show before, I've been digitizing, you know, tons of old LPs and cassettes and other things, and now I'm getting into digitizing old slides and negatives from film that I've taken.
Mm-hmm.
So that business of building preservation of old technology into newer technology is I think a critical thing. And they, in the video, they talk about, you know, the size of the market and things of that nature, of how many VHS tapes are out there with old family memories and stuff on it, and how many old 16 and 8 millimeter films that people have taken over the last, you know, multiple decades that are getting to the point where people have no way of viewing them anymore, right? They just don't have the devices to view it. And one of the things that's interesting, and I was listening to a story yesterday, and I can't remember where, but about digital bit rot, as they call it.
Yes.
Where people are digitizing things and then losing the programs that can read that digital format.
Ooh.
And no longer having access to the things they digitized, and how there's this process that you have to, with each new generation, not only convert it from, you know, CD to DVD to Blu-ray to SD, right?
Right.
SSD, but also how do you bring forward the reader technology?
Right.
So this company claims to have solved that by putting it all in the cloud. Even that, I think it's really funny watching the video. They're like, you know, don't ever lose your memories again by converting them to digital and putting them in the cloud where they'll be safe forever.
Yeah. Forever is a long time when it comes to technology, isn't it?
Yes. once it's in the cloud, that means someone's paying for the storage. So, yeah, you can access them forever as long as you keep paying for them.
Yeah, and storage is like having a storage unit in your local mini mall. You know, you can put stuff in there and you can open it up and take it out. But if you don't have the reader technology, it doesn't matter that it's there and it's safe and climate controlled or not. So yes. You're exactly right. The reader capability is really the key thing. And as we move from different formats of video compression and picture reading capability, you know, the GIFs and the RAW, et cetera, you're exactly right. Those are things that we need to be thinking of.
Yes, and I do like the point that you made, though, on the gamifying aspect of this, where they're actually having other people say, there's 37 pictures of your kid eating ice cream on Thursday. Yeah. This is the good one.
Yeah.
Forget about those 35 others.
To me, this is huge, because when you think about going on vacation, I mean, when you go somewhere and take pictures, Michael, you come back with potentially a couple thousand pictures, right?
Potentially, yes. Yeah. That has happened before.
Yeah, and when that happens, not to put you on the spot, I'll put me on the spot. You know, when I've come back from vacation and I've taken several, you know, a thousand pictures, do I go through and look at them at that point when I'm home? No, not really. I kind of store them, you know, so I know that I've got them and they're safe, but I don't curate them. And
yeah, I actually do, but then again, I'm that way. And so then you have to fold the tinfoil just like this, over on the side. Don't forget the tape, and then put it in a Ziploc baggie
and staple it. So
staple.
Yeah. So I don't quite go that far. I mean, I can find the things I'm looking for, but if I'm looking for just the right sunset, you know, I do probably have 30 pictures of the sunset that I can pick out of one that's maybe just the right one, but that doesn't lend itself very easily or nicely to then sharing all of it and looking back on it. And then they just kind of sit. So there's likely a market, if I just take my personal experience from this, of culling through large libraries of photos and putting a story together that makes sense and looks good.
Yes.
So crowdsourcing memory preservation. Love it.
Very cool. So have you been playing any games lately?
Oh, yeah. Incidentally, I have. I was just thinking about the games that I've been playing recently. And one of the games that I have started playing is a one on the Mac, believe it or not.
What?
Yeah, what? Are you sure? So the Lego franchise, this time from Feral Interactive,
Is this Jurassic?
No, it's the Lego Marvel Superheroes environment. So I've started playing this, and you know that I love the Lego environments. I've enjoyed playing the Harry Potter ones
I've heard that rumor.
Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. So I have started playing the Marvel Superheroes one, and that's been kind of fun so far. I haven't actually cranked it up in a week and change, but it's a big, big download, several gigs worth of data, and I found that to be quite fun. And then the other thing that I've been starting to play just a little bit is with all the awards that have been coming out recently from WWDC, I kind of take that as a cue for things to go try. So I've been trying to play a game called Quest Keeper. And Quest Keeper is a puzzle type game where you are an intrepid explorer, adventurer, and you're going through an environment with is full of spikes that come up through the floor and difficult terrain that you have to quickly, easily navigate around in three dimensions, and you fall off the face of your plane, and then you start over again. So I've started playing that as well. So a couple of games that are on my hit parade. How about you, Michael? What are you playing?
Well, our last show, we had the Eric and Aaron from the Vera Games Project.
Yes.
And one of them mentioned, Aaron mentioned playing Slingshot Braves.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to try it out.
And?
It is a freemium game, but it's even more insidious than that. It's fun. It's basically a twist on Angry Birds, in an anime style, and you have these adventurers, that you have a little slingshot that shoots them, and each of them can get different weapons and different armor, and they have different skills, and you level them up over time, etc. And it starts off, and it goes, oh, you know, if you do this, then you can, you know, keep adventuring over time. You're like, okay, I did that. Now it's like every time you go into a new adventure or a new stage, it downloads content.
Ooh.
And it's like, you know, if you register to be an advanced user, it'll download all the content in advance. It's like, okay, so now you want to tie my email address to this device. Because what it does is when you first start playing it, it doesn't ask, you know, any information. It's just a download and it starts playing. And there's a store and you can buy stuff in it. But the advanced user feature requires providing information about you as a person to connect it up. On top of that, it does this metric or this mechanic where you follow other people. So it's building out a social graph to some degree. The other thing it does is it does not use any way of saving the game content other than the device itself. And so, as you know, I'm doing some development and I've got the latest beta on there. And during one of the betas, it wiped the whole machine and my backup was no good. So I couldn't restore anything back. So I had to start over.
Yes.
Which caused a big problem for me in my race car game, which is now done with it. I was really, really, really far on, and I'm not starting back over, so it's gone. But this one, it was not far enough along, so I was able to, you know, get back to where I was and past it. However, on top of that, now it's like, now you want to register for advanced so that it'll store the stuff in the cloud. Not in iCloud, not in Game Center.
No, but in their cloud.
Yes, and tie it to your email. And I'm like, you know what? Not going to do it.
Done.
So if one of the next betas wipes it, I'll let it wipe. But right now, it's still fun. It's kind of fun.
Cool. I'm glad you're enjoying it and sad that you're getting set back by the betas.
Yeah, well, the betas are getting better. So as they are wont to do over the course of the summer.
Well, we hope everyone is enjoying their start of their summer. We hope you're playing games. We hope you're enjoying being at work. And we're looking forward to bring you another edition of GamesAtWork.biz in the coming week or so.
Sounds good.
Have a great one. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.